Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
Career 360, only on Money FM 89.3.
This is Primetime on Money FM 89.3. Now, for business leaders, the COVID-19 pandemic has accelerated the need to change. Unimaginable shifts in our daily lives are compelling companies to adapt quickly and identify creative and unconventional ways to operate and survive. Worldwide uncertainty has made it more difficult for leaders to find their footing. And those who like to operate from a place of clarity are finding few ports in this global storm. So how do effective leaders deal with uncertainty? We're speaking today to Nick Chia, President for Singapore at Russell Reynolds Associates. Nick, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation, Howie.
Let's talk about then central issues with regard to effective leadership. And why is this important to talk about?
Howie, when things are stable and relatively certain, you have rules of thumb which people can tend to use, right? Standard operating procedures, SOPs, everyone more or less agrees on the way forward. And typically, authority is vested in a few individuals to make decisions. And these individuals are usually at the top of an organization. Mm. However, when things are not stable and not certain, then by definition, you don't have an approach which everyone agrees upon. Most of us dislike uncertainty, especially in areas of our lives which are significant, in personal health, safety of our family, our jobs. So we tend to look for to those who can reassure us, who can give us some certainty, and in the absence of certainty, some confidence that we're on the right path. And the stakes are so high right now, there's no precedent, there's no playbook. And this uncertainty is across all kinds of lines, right? Economic, health, geographical, political. It's affecting all of us. And so to get kind of everyone working and working together again, we need leaders who are effective, who can inspire and guide us forward, but together as well.
How though?
Well, look, you know, in uncertain times, I think the first thing I would suggest, which our clients have seen be effective, is to communicate, right? Communicate, 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 even when you don't know the answers. And I think a mistake some leaders make is to not share when they don't know the answer. But frankly, no one does, right? The challenge is you need to do it with poise and composure, because what you want to do is reassure people and not make them more unstable.
So are we saying it's how you say it, not what you're saying as well?
It's actually both, right? Yeah. I think the content is important. How you say it is also important. And one of the things that the crisis is showing us is that it's not about the charismatic, you know, lead from the front, inspiring, you know, leader under the spotlight. It can be the very quietly confident, slightly more reserved, connecting individual who actually could inspire that confidence. So we shouldn't be kind of looking to stereotypes to be our leaders. We need to look for people who can do a few things. One is not just lead themselves, but help others to lead, right? Because you want to spread the leadership load. Are there culture carriers and culture champions within your organization who can set visible examples and who can share the load with the more formal leaders of the organization? Are you using data to guide your decisions? We all have our biases, conscious and unconscious. And sometimes if you go with gut feel and instinct, that may lead you astray, particularly in times of uncertainty. For example, could you survey your team a bit more rather than assume that when you ask them how they're feeling and they say okay, that they really are okay, right? And so the other thing is also for leaders, we're finding in this kind of environment, there is a tendency to look inwards, to try to find the answers from within the organization. And actually, we feel that it's good to look outwards, to look to your customers, to your partners, to your suppliers, to regulators, and to, because all of us are in this together, and look at them as partners in trying to solve the issue. And lastly, we think that there tends to be a reliance on the tried and tested. And frankly, in a time of uncertainty, we need to know how long to stay with the tried and tested until it doesn't work, and be prepared to abandon that in pursuit of a newer approach.
Are you still seeing those C-suite doing some of these things?
Yes, we do, because I think sometimes people in the most senior roles feel that it is their job to provide the solution. And frankly, we are all in a situation where we don't know what the solution is. Mm. And secondly, I think people do, you know, I think you need to be realistically optimistic, right? Don't give people false hope. But look, we all want to know that things will improve, that things will get better. So the trick is, how do you manage that nuance between being authentic and being, you know, pragmatic and being transparent, but not making people feel like there's no way forward? So the challenge, I think, is leaders is to balance the two.
Yeah. How much, though, Nick, do generations of workforces come into play here? Because I'm kind of old school and old fashioned. I want my leader to lead. That's why you get paid the big bucks. That's why you're leading my company, right? And I'm in the middle here. So you tell me what to do, I will follow.
I've also
heard my younger colleagues say, oh, you know, they're so arm's length. They're in an ivory tower. I don't know what they're thinking, and why should I follow you if you're not going to be in the trenches with us?
And you're right. I think the fundamentals of business are probably similar. And every generation, frankly, has, you know, opinions about the generations that came before them, ours included. I think at the bottom line, you know, everyone wants to know, what's the reason for being? What's the purpose of the organization? Is there a bigger purpose beyond shareholder value, making money and doing whatever it is? So if you are aligned with that, then I think that would be very motivating for you. Is the leadership able to bring that out with more clarity during this period? Are there aspects of the reason for being, the purpose, whatever you want to call it, that relate to doing well for the company, but doing well for the broader society, right? We're all interdependent entities. We are no longer standalone silos. So that's one. I think the second area that you kind of touched on was, you know, kind of tell me what to do. And frankly, when we don't know what to do, we do want someone to tell us with some degree of assurance that this is the right way forward, right? And I think that comes not from foolhardiness or just blind confidence, but from a kind of courage or bravery. Because frankly, these are all very difficult decisions, often counter to what other people are saying. And there's a lot of stress and scrutiny, right? Today, every decision that a leader makes is going to be examined, you know, for in multiple angles, just in hindsight as to whether they were right or wrong. So that bravery has to come with a sense of thinking independently, being willing to make difficult decisions without enough data, to remain resilient under pressure, but then also to say, have the humility to say, I was wrong, I need to then pivot to the right, and let's do it, because here's the... So I think it's not about making a decision, it's probably making a succession of decisions.
We're speaking with Nick Chia, who's president for Singapore, Russell Reynolds Associates. What are some of the strategies that leaders can adopt, though, during this time? You've talked about a few of them. Are they the same as well for all kinds of crises?
I think it's probably slightly more pronounced when it's in a crisis, but I think I would say, and it sounds so trite, but check in regularly with your people, right? When people say they're okay, especially...
But you also mentioned earlier, don't just take at face value when they say we're fine. But then you can't be intrusive either. Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? That's irritating.
That's right. So I think you need multiple data points, and that's where the spreading of the leadership load, right? And you can get, you know, kind of inputs on people, not just from their bosses, but from their peers and from their subordinates, right? And so the trick is, you know, is the organizational culture such that people feel that they should step up and lead? Or is leadership only given to someone with a title? Mm. If you can get everyone to feel like, I want to be proactive and take charge of this, I noticed my colleague seems to be quiet the last three Zoom calls. And, you know, I'm going to check in to see how they're doing. I'm going to ask that person out for a coffee now that we didn't go out and have coffee, right? And so I think if people do that and highlight to the senior executives, hey, I checked in and this person seems a bit, you know, still a bit concerning, is there something we can do? That's going to be much more helpful than someone coming to you saying, are you okay? And people feeling insecure in the current job environment to say, I'm not okay. They want to say, I'm fine. And in fact, I'm working very hard. So I think that's one of the challenges in a remote working environment, right? The second thing I would say is that we've seen people step up during the crisis because the crisis became a crucible for them to show their ability. And others who were nominated and thought of as the leaders did not. Mm. So I think you need to kind of look at better preparing your future leaders, invest now in accelerating their development, and include managing in a downturn, which is not something you typically would train people for.
Yeah. So you're saying moving forward, this is going to affect what kinds of people companies want to get in for the C-level talent or C-level kind of positions.
Yes,
what are they looking for now as we head into a future economy, post-COVID recovery, etc.?
Well, I think it's probably people who can kind of understand where they're strong and where they're not so strong, right? You probably need, you know, kind of ambidextrous leaders, right, who can be very conversant on both the left and right hand, meaning they can be very strategic, but then be also very hands-on and operational, right? They can be that lead from the front team leader, but also know in certain situations they need to be the proactive and loyal follower.
So you
kind of need people to flex between different situations depending on the role they're in. And frankly, I mean, one of the things sometimes I talk to senior executives is they are looking after their people. Who's looking after them, right? Can they maintain their resilience, their health, their mental well-being in a situation of stress?
Lonely at the top, unfortunately, I think the impression is that you're supposed to just sort of take care of yourself.
It is. And you think about it, the higher you go, the fewer people you can confide in, right? Because you are supposed to be the one reassuring everybody and telling everybody where to go. So, but I think what people should look at is look at your, you know, don't look at your competitors, your, you know, suppliers, your partners in the typical boxes in which you place them. Look at them as fellow journey people in this industry that you're in. Can you as a group make this a better, you know, industry for all of you? And that means you should reach out to probably people in your industry without thinking of them as adversaries, but probably as people who are probably facing similar issues and might have actually some ideas that you can share, obviously without, you know, getting into competition rules and all that. But you might have to reframe how we look at all these players, which also might give you more opportunities in the future as COVID is forcing a realignment of industry dynamics.
Very quickly, Nick, then how can organizations identify these kinds of people?
Well,
all very subjective, the kinds of behaviors you're describing.
So what I suggest is that, you know, try, if you're a senior person, or even if, I mean, if you're in business or any organization, cultivate and make friends with those who think differently than you, right? Who come from a different background, maybe different training that you seem to not be aligned with. But if you can harness that, that's really diversity, right? And that diversity exists in all organizations. And they are typically the ones on the periphery who are the early warning signals. They're the blind spot detectors. They will tell you about potential opportunities, but potential threats. The inclusion part of diversity is where you bring them into the mix. And I think the more arguments about this you have, the better. Not on the personal individual side, but on the business side. I think, and secondly, I think reframe your company's reason for being, right? So I was talking to a client who says,
overhauling mission values. Oh, Nick.
Not even that. No, they lay out offices, right? They design offices for people, right? So I said, and they said, now we don't even know whether there will be offices in the future.
True.
But they are saying, actually now, you know, then to say, I need you to know how my people can be productive at home, in the office, when they're traveling, if they can travel. Can you tell me about the best way for them to be productive wherever they are?
Yeah.
So no longer are you an office designer, but you're now a client or customer experience architect, right?
Okay.
So I think part of it is reframing how you look at the world.
Right. Nick Chia, President, Singapore at Russell Reynolds Associates. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nick, and stay safe.
Thank you, Harvey. You too.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.